My name is Jim Bach. I'm an alcoholic.
Amen.
It's good to be here. It's really good to be sober. My sobriety day is November 19th, 1987. My home group is the sponsorship group in New Jersey. And I want to know who they brought from Hawaii. Just kidding. Anyway, thanks for speaking, you guys, Eric and Nora. It was good to hear you guys speak. I love Hawaii. I started thinking, you know, about the making amends to the pet store owner. My mind went all over the place. I've heard a lot of inventories, and I've never heard, you know, really heard a whole pet store. I'm an alcoholic, if you can't tell. You know, if you're new, you know, it doesn't mean that my life gets real good when I stop drinking. It just means that when I drink, my body produces an effect that doesn't happen for everybody. When I drink, I go places. Things happen that are totally unpredictable. When I take a drink, everything seems to come together. The problem is when I sober up, you guys are very frightening. I feel alone. I feel scared. I feel like everybody's out to get me. I feel like I was born with these special abilities, these special powers, to look at people and just know right away what they're all about. I mean, I can look at a guy and just tell you he's a jerk, just right off the bat. I can look at a girl and she can smile and I know she wants to get married. My problems started, you know, at a pretty young age. I mean, I had it together. I really did. I was doing very well until I turned 5. What happened was I moved from one school system to another, and these kids were ganging up on me. They were giving me weird looks, and I interpret those looks to mean that you don't like me or I don't measure up. And I look at their sneakers to tell how well they're doing and their jeans and trying to fit in, you know. And in first grade, it was stressful. It was horrible. I was devastated by my thinking. And I'm looking at these kids, and what I've learned to do at a very young age and have continued throughout my life is to try to present a persona that you think is cool so you'll like me so I won't feel so damn alone. And what my life has become, you know, before I picked up a drink and when I got sober and I had yet to work the steps, my life was an endless series of auditions. And what I would do is I'd be whoever you wanted me to be. And secretly inside, I just want to be liked. I mean, it doesn't manifest like that. I might hit you, but I really just want to be liked. These kids, you know, they were, you know, doing their thing, and I thought I'd never break into their club. I thought that I'd never get these guys to like me enough. So the teacher asks a question. My hand darts up, and I'm going to impress them, dazzle them with my intelligence. And I answered the question that she asked, and I got it wrong. And now I'm embarrassed more than I was before, and I couldn't handle it. It was just horrible, and I better redeem myself. A little while later, she asked another question. My hand darts up. I answer that one. And she said, "No, I'm sorry." And I'm thinking, oh, man, she's out to get me. You know, it's horrible. I can't believe she did it to me twice, right? And I'm thinking, you know, what are these guys thinking about me? Do they think I came to school on a short bus? They think I've got, like, brain damage? They think I'm retarded? Oh, my God, it's horrible. And it couldn't have gotten any worse, but I had to go to the bathroom. Now I'm sitting there. I'm thinking, oh, my God, how do you ask to go to the bathroom? I'll put my hand up, and the whole class in unison is going to say, hey, retard, she's not asking a question. Or I'll put my hand up, and the teacher will say, oh, it's a retarded boy. Let's give him another chance. Everybody, let's give him a chance. Even you can get this one. And I'll get that one wrong. And I'm horrified, and I just can't handle the pressure. And I've got these good ideas. I have brilliant ideas. Brilliant. You know, and my sponsor's not here, so they're brilliant. Brilliant ideas. And this idea is just pee your pants. So I'm sitting there, I'm thinking, yeah, good idea, good idea. So I go with it, and I'm like, oh. And for the first few minutes, it wasn't a bad idea. It was warm. The pressure's off. I'm thinking, thank God that's over. You know? Until I looked down, and I was thinking, oh, my God, it's a whole lot more than I thought. I'm like, oh, God. You know? And then it dawned on me, this is first period. Oh, it's going to be a long day. Now, that's who I become when I stopped drinking. That's who I became when I got out of rehab. That's the, you know, it's not getting any better. I mean, over the years, I had these delusions that it was going to come together, that everybody was going to start recognizing how wonderful I am. You know, and I'd have these obsessions. That it might be about money, it might be about scholastics, it might be about power, you know, I have these ideas, and I go with them, and I'm doing really well, and you know what, no matter how beautiful she is, she's just not enough, you know? And no matter how well I score, somebody else, you know, like a little Asian kid beats me out, you know? And it's like, no matter how well I've got it going on, it's always, I get to the point where it's coming together, and it's just, is that it? Is that all there is? But what happened was, I was in high school. I think I was about 16 years old. This kid, Mark, calls me up, and he says, "Jimmy, I got a case of Budweiser and some girls." Now, I wasn't thinking about the Budweiser. I'm thinking about the girls. I'm 16. I've been trying to get married since I was 5. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, oh, my God. And I'm thinking about all the hot girls in my school and how they might be there, and I'm very excited. And this car pulls in, and I go running outside, and this girl hops out of the back seat, and I take one look at her. And I'm thinking, get back in the car before the neighbors see you. I'm like, we're the hot girls, you know? And I'm like, oh, my God, I can't believe this. And she goes, hop in the middle. And I'm thinking, oh, she's bigger than me. I better get in, you know? And I get in, and we start driving. And I take a look at this girl, but she's got really pretty eyes. Now, if I could stick to the eyes and no one knows, what the heck? So I make some moves, and I try to talk to her, and I try to bring her around, and I can't even talk to her. And I'm stuttering and stammering and spitting, and, you know, it's like I have Tourette's. I don't know how to communicate. I am broken. I don't know how to do this. I mean, I'd already gone to the seventh grade dance, and I'm sitting on the sidelines because I'm afraid. I'm terrified of rejection, you know, and I don't know why I'm so broken. I don't know why I can't fit in. I don't know why I'm so alone. I'm the loneliest person on this planet, you know. What happens is this kid, you know, he hands me a Budweiser. And I'm thinking, yeah, whatever. You know, everybody else is drinking. I'm going to go along. See, now that first night drunk, you could have diagnosed me as alcoholic. My very first night drunk, because what happens to me does not happen to normal people. You know, and what happens is I take a sip, and it had been in the bushes for a couple of days, so it tastes a little skunky. It wasn't very good, and nobody else seemed to make a big deal. And I start sipping, and oh, my God, it's horrible. And I finally got the first can down, and I crushed the can. I threw it on the floor, and I'm thinking, oh, that was disgusting. And then someone offered me another one. And I wanted to be cool, and I'm thinking I should have kept the can. You know, and so I start sipping the second one, and I don't know if it was the second, the third, the fourth, the fifth beer, something. You know what happens? Okay, I'm drinking. All of a sudden, I look over, and this girl lost 15 pounds. I was like, whoa. And all of a sudden, I said something. I didn't think about it, though. Okay, my whole life, I look at you, and I'm looking you in the eyes, and I'm begging to just to like me. Like I'm less than, right? And I look in this girl's eyes, and she wanted me. Everybody, at that point, everybody was wanting me, right? And the hunger that came from this girl, it was like, do me a favor, please, like me. You know what I mean? And I was like, oh my, you know? And I said something, and she laughed, and she said something, and I laughed, and next thing, you know, I'm having a conversation. And that's a home run for a guy like me. I can't communicate. I'm not in the game. I'm on the sidelines. All of a sudden, I'm at the party, and it's going well. Right? What happens when I pick up a drink? My body processes it differently. Not only do I have this tremendous effect that, like, you guys are not so scary and all you girls are beautiful, but what happens is when I pick up a drink, it's like opening Pandora's box because all bets are off. I have no idea what's going to happen. I pick up a drink and the drink takes a drink and I'm off to the races. And next thing you know, we're making out. And I'm thinking Budweiser, the king of beers. This is fantastic. Oh, my God. This is great. And I got the hottest girl in the class, and my life's coming together. But what happens is I keep drinking, and I keep drinking. And what happens is next thing you know, I'm kissing her sister. And I'm like, oh. And she's upset, and I'm trying to convince her there's enough to go around. All right? That night, I hit my first bottom. What I know about my alcoholism, that bottoms don't get me sober. Because the next thing you know, I'm laying face down in a gravel parking lot. I got cinders on my tongue, rocks in my face, and one of these girls is stepping on my back. Because apparently I said something. It's okay for Jenny Craig to give out dieting advice. It's not okay for me. So, but bottoms don't get me. You know, I can get used to laying in parking lots. That is really a small price to pay for a guy like me to join the human race. You know, fast forward through my drinking, the bottoms change. They change. Things happen. Totally unexpected. You know, one night I go out, I have a couple of drinks. Some guy's buying. I have a big job the next day. I know I'm not going to drink all night because I'm underfinanced. And this guy's buying drinks, and I don't want to insult him. I keep drinking, and next thing you know, 50 foot of guardrail, a telephone pole, and two of my buddies in surgery. You know, the first accident is horrible. But I'll tell you, the second, the third, the fourth car I wreck, I get used to it. I can get used to anything because I'm alcoholic, because I love to drink. I love the effect produced by alcohol. Fast forward through my drinking, it's like, you know, it's just like, you know, it's like a bad night. You know, I live in New Jersey, and I start drinking. Next thing you know, I'm in New York doing an armed robbery. And it seemed like a really good idea at the time. But what happens is I have no idea what's going to happen. No idea what's going to happen. I pick up a drink, all bets are off. You know, and things are happening. You know, the first time I get evicted, that's a bottom. The second time I get evicted, it's so much easier. You know what I mean? I can get used to anything. Pretty soon, I'm doing the math, a month and a half security, first month's rent, that's 2.5 months. It took them 5 months to throw me out. I doubled my money by not paying the rent. Well, yeah, it makes sense. Right? Fast forward through my drinking. Things are happening. People are starting to turn on me. Everybody's really, really narrow-minded. Everybody's picking on me. My little sister, we drank together, you know, and she turns on me. You know, we're sitting at the dinner table, and she's like, "Oh, Mom, you know what Jimmy did last night?" I'm like, I don't know. I'm thinking, and no one else knows either. She's like, "Well, you know, I came in, and he was peeing in the dishwasher." I'm like, "Oh, Jesus." And, you know, people don't understand this sort of thing. You know, fast forward through my drinking, I'm driving one afternoon, and I'm drinking just Budweiser, and I didn't really consider beer drinking. You know what I mean? It's sort of like this guy came speak at our home group, and he's sharing about, "Hey, I heard your story. You're drinking Jack Daniels. You're drinking vodka. You're doing heroin. You're doing cocaine. They should have a special program for those who just drink beer." And I yelled out, "They do. Al-Anon." Right? Guy has never come back to our group. Anyway, so this afternoon, I'm just drinking a couple beers, no big deal. But what happens is that I have that phenomenon of craving where it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter alcohol in whatever form. It could be beer. It could be rubbing alcohol. It could be mouthwash. It could be vanilla extract. Once I wake up the beast, I have no idea what's going to happen. And it's like a friend of mine said, it's like having sex with a gorilla. You're not done until the gorilla's done. All right? When I drink, it's messy. It's horrible. It's disgusting, right? So I'm drinking beers. Some guy pulls out some Jack Daniels. I start chugging Jack, and I love Jack Daniels. Oh, man, it's like a meal. It's like, you know, I'm chugging it. And all of a sudden, some guy's hitchhiking down Route 10. We're like, "Oh, let's pick him up," right? So we pick him up, and then we decide to keep him, you know? And it always seems like a good idea at the time, you know? Fast forward through my drink, and I'm working on Wall Street. Stuff's happening. People are getting on my case. Every time, you know, they want to let me know what I did, you know, and they only tell you a little bit. And I'm losing my license, and I'm losing my cars, and I'm losing this, and I'm losing that. And my family's turning on me. And what happens is I end up in a rehab, and some guy comes from Alcoholics Anonymous, and he said he was sober for 3 years. And that seemed really, really excessive. I mean, I cannot, why would you really, I mean, if you could stop, why would you stop that long? Right? And what, you know, what happens is this guy talks about God of his understanding. He's not a religious God. He said a God of my understanding. He said, "I'm not trying to convince you what God is. I'm just telling you that I have a God in my life. You can call it whatever you want." And what happened, he said, 3 years ago, I got down on my knees and I said a prayer to a God I didn't believe in. And it doesn't matter. It's just a principle. And that next morning, I got on my knees and I said a prayer to a God I didn't believe in. I was atheist. And I'll tell you, more than 21 years ago. Okay, and I haven't picked up a drink since. Now, that's a very small part of my recovery. You know, I think the most important thing I could do in recovery is get a sponsor. Sponsorship for me is key. Okay, they've been telling me I've had problems for a very long time. I remember I was 7 years old and I went to school and some kid gave me a look, so I threw him down the stairs. You know, I just wanted to be his friend. Right? And they send me to somebody, and it's like an interview, and it's like an audition. And I'll try to be honest with all these therapists and psychotherapists and psychiatrists and everybody else. And I'll try to tell them the truth, but what happens is they give me a weird look. And the end of my story changes. because I want to be liked. I want to be liked more than anything. I've got a spiritual malady. I have a separation from you and God, you know. And what happened was I go to this meeting, put my hand up out of rehab. I need rides to meetings if anybody can help me. They told me to do this in rehab. I don't think it's a good idea, but they told me to do this. And no big deal. Nothing happened. Some guy, you know, comes up to me in the parking lot, and he says, "Oh, I can give you rides. Where do you live?" And I told him where I lived, and he was like 2 blocks away. I was like, "Oh, that's pretty cool." He said, "You need a ride home?" I was like, "This is great. It's December." You know. And he said, "Well, come on." And he said, "We've got a bunch of guys over here. We're gonna stop at the diner on the way." And I'm like, I don't like people. You know, and so what I do is what every self-respecting newcomer would do. I put my hand into my empty pocket, and I said, "Well..." And he did what every good member of Alcoholics Anonymous would do. He said, no, my treat. You're new. You're supposed to be broke. If you weren't broke, we'd be suspicious. And he laughed, and I laughed, and I got in the car. And I went to the diner with these guys, and they're all like young guys, and they're all talking about drinking stories. But, you know, I'll tell you, my whole life is a secret. You know, and I'm like, "Shh, the waitress is coming," you know. All right. So we did that for a while, and by the end of the evening, I'm laughing right along. I'm like, whatever, you know. He drops me off that night. He says, "You know, I'll pick you up tomorrow at 7. And I'm thinking, how does he know I don't have plans? Right? But I didn't have plans. So he showed up. I got in the car, and every day, you know, "Where are we going?" "What does it matter?" I'm like, "I got nowhere else to go. It doesn't really matter where I'm going, you know." I go to a discussion meeting. He's sitting next to me. I put my hand up to share something brilliant that I learned in rehab. This guy didn't go to rehab. What did he know about AA, right? I put my hand up. He's in there. He pushes it down. He goes, "Don't hurt yourself, kid." Right? I'm like, "Geez, not very nice." Right? But he's dragging me to meetings every day, and I'm like a celebrity in AA. I'm the new guy. I got like 17 minutes, right? And I got 2 days, and I got 3 days, and all of a sudden everybody, "Oh, Jim, it's so good you're getting sober at such a young age. Oh, it's wonderful. I can't believe how, oh my God, you have the world at your feet. You have so much potential. It's wonderful what you're doing." And then some other guy gets out of rehab, and like, I'm nobody. Right? I'm like, he's not going to make it. Look at, you know, I'm giving him the hex, you know. I'm like, "Hey, aren't you thirsty?" Right? Right? And I get home, and my parents up to this point were really, really nice to me. And it's like, "Oh, they're so proud of me." And then it's like, "You know, Jim, maybe you want to go to work. But now what I hear is, I want my money, I hate your guts, you're a disappointment to the, you know, all this, others." I'm like, "Oh, my God. And that's horrible." And I walk down Main Street in my town, and I can't. I got to switch the side of the street because I put stop payments on checks to this guy, and I bounce checks to this. You know, and I have like disasters. I've got like fires everywhere, right? And, you know, my mom comes in one night, and she's like, "Oh, here." I'm like, "What's that?" It's like a big bag. I'm like, "What's that?" And she goes, "Well, maybe you want to look in there." I'm like, "What? Oh." Now, when I'm drinking, I like to move around. I forget forwarding addresses. I don't want you to know. Right? So I open up this bag, and there's like credit card statements getting higher and higher, and a couple years later they're begging for their money, and I'm like, "That's not so bad." And I've got warrants from towns I've never been to. You know, I've got all sorts of crap going on. I'm, oh my God, and I'm distressed in my head, and I go to a meeting, and I'm like, and I'm usually just, by the end of the meeting, I'm calmed down. I'm like, "Oh my God, okay. But now I'm going to meetings and it's not working. You know, what I discovered is that going to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings and not working the steps is like going to a bar and not drinking. You can only have so much fun. You know? So this guy drops me off one night, and I'm crazy, and I'm watching the clock go by, and I got a drink. And I call him up. You know, that was the last thing in the world I meant to do. I called him up, and he was a good member of Alcoholics Anonymous, because 1 o'clock in the morning, he didn't screen me in the voicemail. He answered the phone, you know, and he invited me into his home, and I rode my little sister's purple Schwinn over there, you know what I mean? Real cool guy. I'm doing bank robberies and, you know, just stupid crap. I'm just robbing people left and right. Now I'm, like, on a purple Schwinn and just horrible, you know, and what happens is I get over there, I bang on the door, he lets me in, he said, come on in, sit down. And what the difference between this guy and every therapist and person, the really well-meaning person that came into my life to help me, what he did something radically different, because he looked in my eyes and he didn't ask me questions. He looked in my eyes and he started telling me a story. You know, he said, well, I got sober in New York. I'm like, yeah. A lot of drinking in New York. Oh, yeah. He said, well, let me tell you a story. One night I was out drinking and we were in the back of this cab and another cab driver came around the corner, smashed in the cab. I'm like, yeah. He said, well, driver got out, talked to the other driver. I got tired of waiting. I jumped up front and took the cab. I was like, well, that's pretty cool. Right? He said, next thing you know, we're in the tombs. I'm thinking, how does he know about the tombs? He said, yeah, they had me shackled. I'm like, oh, my God, I hate to be shackled. He said, yeah. And then he said, I noticed there was a woman on each side. And I'm like, nah, come on. They separate the men and the women in the tombs. He said, well, I looked down. They had really big hands. I looked up, and they had Adam's apples. I was like, what? Now, you couldn't get anything out of me. You could torture me, and I would never tell you anything about me. But all of a sudden, I started talking. Next thing you know, I'm telling him the story. I say, nah, that's nothing. One night, I'm down by Washington Square Park. Next thing you know, I'm chasing this transvestite around the park with a hatchet. Now, if he was a therapist, a psycho, just one of these shrinks, right, he would have probably had a radically different approach, right? Radically different approach, you know, because he looked at me and laughed, right? What the psychiatrist might have said was, well, Jim, why don't you explain the series of events that led up to the chase? And we didn't need to go there, right? I just wanted my money back, right? So, next thing you know, he's telling me this story. He's telling me this horrible sexual escapade. I mean, this story would have scared Jeffrey Dahmer. I was like, oh, my God. This guy is a freak. I got to get the hell. I got to get out of here. I'm going to run to the door, but he's going to probably stab me in the back. I got to distract him in the kitchen and just book and get the heck out. I'm freaking out. And all of a sudden, he looks at me. He starts laughing. And I got caught up in the laughter. And I'm laughing now. And I'm like, I can't believe it. And I figured, well, I've got a little bit of leverage. Now I can tell him just about anything. Who's he going to tell? So I tell him another story. And then he tells me another story. And that went back for me, back and forth, maybe an hour and a half. And at the end of that period of time, he knew more about me than 20 years of therapists combined. You know, what he did by telling me his story is he laid down his armor. There was no defense. It made it easy to reveal who I had become. It's like looking at a little baby. I look at a little baby, there's no armor. It's easy to be real. And that's the beauty of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I'm leaving his house that night. He goes, you know, you did more for me than I could do for you, than I did for you. I'm like, what? No idea. No idea. What I've discovered in 21 years of being sober is that 1% of my recovery is going through the steps of my sponsor. The other 99% has been taking people through the steps over and over again. Because what happens is when I take somebody through the steps, I end up taking myself. I remember things that I forgot long ago. You know, and what happens is a number of years later, I get a call, and you know, I've always had good, strong sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous. I get a call from the psych unit, and they're like, we've got a live one. We don't know what to do with this guy. This guy tried to kill himself. He's catatonic. We give him shock treatment, meds, everything. Nothing's working on him. I'm like, I'm thinking, so? I'm busy. Okay? Because I have this guy, you know, this guy owes me money. I'm running an ad agency. This guy's owes me $30,000. He's not paying me. My life's... I'm like... And what comes out of my mouth is, okay, I'll be right there. So I blow off the business meeting and go over to the psych, and I look at this guy, and this guy is like way beyond anything I could, you know, imagine communicating with. I look at him. He's got these sweatpants, and they're like, you know, like wet and dry and that whole thing, and he's got like sores on his neck, and he's got like his hair's all matted, and I'm like, oh my God, what do you do with this? And I'm like, oh, I don't know, but what my sponsor told me is, you know, look at the moon. You see how bright and shiny the moon is? The moon has no power. If the source of the power is really, really big, it can illuminate anything. And just think, if your God's bigger than the sun, think about what he could do for you. And so I said a prayer to this God, and I said, God, you better take over. I'm out of my league here. And I walk in, and I look this guy in the eyes, and I don't know where it came from, but all of a sudden, I said, hey, I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Chances are, if I get the opportunity to tell somebody my story tonight, I might not pick up a drink. Do you think you can help me out? And he said, okay. And I started telling my story, and all of a sudden, the story from the past, I never thought about this, you know, before that. I said, well, you know, toward the end of my drinking, I'm living behind my girlfriend's parents' furnace in their basement, right? And he's looking at me like, oh, it's like she can keep an eye on me. And what happened was this girl was like really upset with me because I totaled her car. And like before the cops came, I told her that I didn't have a license so she wouldn't get in that much trouble. And we switched seats and she's upset, right? Really upset. And this homeless guy's going, yeah. And I said, well, you know, what happens if she gets an insurance check and she gets a brand new car and she didn't even thank me? He's like, he gives me like a weird, he's like, ah. You know, and I said, well, this girl is like a little upset with me. She got a brand new car, light blue velour seats, and she won't let me drive it. And I've got these white tennis shorts on that I found on someone's clothesline. I got a T-shirt, and I'm like, it disappeared for a few days. I got these weird pains in my stomach. And I'm like, what organ is that? And they go, that's not an organ. I'm thinking, that's bad, you know, and I'm sitting in this girl's car, and she's already upset because I disappeared. And there was all sorts of rumors about things I was doing, and, you know, and I'm like, oh, man. And I'm telling this guy's story. And next thing you know, I crap my pants. And he looks at me. And all of a sudden, all I heard was, and he goes, I did that. Right? And I look over at this guy, and I'm thinking, probably like 15 minutes ago, look at you, Jesus. Right? Right? And so what happens is he tells me his story a little bit, and I tell him my story, and that went back and forth. I don't know how long it was, but I walked out of there. He had a smile ear to ear, and I said, you know, thank you. You're doing much more for me than I'm doing for you. And he's like, so I go, and I'm like, okay, God. Okay, let's take care of this business. You know, I did my job. You do your job, right? So I get on the phone, and I didn't lose 30,000. I lost 60. Now I'm like, what? And all of a sudden, I got this guy on the phone. I start laughing. Now, you have to understand that before the previous morning, for like a week, I'm fighting with this guy. We're like almost at death threats. You know what I mean? And I am so frustrated and so upset. And all of a sudden, he says, it's not 30, it's 60. I start laughing. And I said, at least nobody died. He said, what? He was prepared for a fight. I said, at least no one died. Money's not all that important. We'll clean it up. We'll fix it. We'll do whatever's necessary. And what happened was that company gave me hundreds of thousands of dollars in business that I didn't deserve. What Alcoholics Anonymous does for me is it plugs me into this power that's much greater than anything I've ever experienced. It makes me shine in ways that are just marvelous. You know, if you're not getting that effect from Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm willing to bet either you're not an alcoholic or you're doing it wrong. You know, that's my experience. This is my observation. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love everything about Alcoholics Anonymous. I love real active groups. I love groups that, you know, they hate me. You know what I mean? They hate me. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, your group's a cult. You know, I'm like, yeah. Yeah, it is, and we're going to sacrifice a virgin if we can find one. Right? And I love everything about Alcoholics Anonymous. I've had an experience in Alcoholics Anonymous that you just can't make up. Okay? I went from Wall Street. I ran an ad agency. I ran a restaurant. I'm an ER nurse. You know, I don't know how many people go from armed robbery to being a nurse. Okay, I don't imagine it happens all that often, you know. But I'll tell you what it does is it puts me in a position. What Alcoholics Anonymous gave me is it puts me in a position where I can use what you guys have taught me, you know, where I can break the news to somebody's family that a loved one's going to die, you know, and I can show compassion in ways that I couldn't have shown compassion had I not sponsored hundreds of people in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not because I'm sober, you know, for a while. It's because of the buzz that it gives me. If I can't get a better buzz in Alcoholics Anonymous than on the street, I'm going on the street. You know, I love alcohol. I love drugs. I love it all. Okay? But Alcoholics Anonymous, man, this is an awesome buzz. It's really a good buzz. If you haven't found that buzz, find somebody who's got it and just do what they do. Just shut up and do what they do. Thanks.